I will be reading from Genesis chapter 17, verses 1 through 16. When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am God Almighty. Walk before me faithfully and be blameless. Then I will make my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers." Abraham fell face down, and God said to him, "As for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham. For I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you now reside as a foreigner, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God." Then God said to Abraham, "As for you, you must keep your covenant, you and your descendants after you, for the generations to come. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you, the covenant you are to keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You are to undergo circumcision, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and you. For the generations to come, every male among you who is 8 days old must be circumcised, including those born in your household or bought with money from a foreigner. Those who are not your offspring, whether born in your household or bought with your money, they must be circumcised. My covenant in your flesh is to be an everlasting covenant. Any uncircumcised male who has not been circumcised in the flesh will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant." God also said to Abraham, "As for Sarah, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of the nations. Kings of people will come from her." Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, "Will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90?
Good morning to everyone. Sorry. We are in the, as Greg mentioned, this is the second week of Advent, and the major theme for this season of Advent is covenant, which I mentioned last week. At its most basic is a sacred agreement. And last week we looked at the covenant between God and Noah, and it was, as we saw, an expansive covenant. It was a covenant that started between God and one man and one family, but then expanded out into all generations and all of creation. And the promise of that covenant was never again. Never again will destroying creation be an option for God. Never again will that be a way of dealing with sin in the world. But as we also saw, the problem of sin and evil in the world did not go away. The relationship between the Creator and the creatures, the creation, was fractured. And so God needed a plan to heal this fracture. And he does. He comes up with a plan, a big one. And it's a plan that will include all the nations, all the peoples of the earth. But in order to enact that plan, it has to start somewhere. And it starts in a very small family. So if last week the covenant was vast and wide, we see this week that it narrows to a very specific point in time and to a very specific family. God, and I'm sure everyone can relate to this and think of a story from their own lives, but God tends to do things in a kind of funny way sometimes. I was reading, and I think people begin to recognize this. Later on in life, you look back and you recognize this. And I was reading an obituary for Billy Graham this week, and one of the things that they mentioned in it was that how surprised he was by all this that happened in his life. And in his autobiography, he wrote, "I have often said that the first thing I'm going to do when I get to heaven is ask, why me, Lord? Why did you choose a farm boy from North Carolina to preach to so many people, to have such a wonderful team of associates, and to have a part in what you were doing in the latter half of the 20th century?" There's that question, why me, Lord? I think it's been asked by many people, and I can almost be sure that it was asked by Abram and Sarai. Why me, Lord? Why did you call us as a couple out of Mesopotamia in our 60s and 70s with no children to be the start of your family? So this call to Abraham comes that I'm imagining Abraham, he's either sitting around a fire, sitting at his house, I'm not sure what he's doing, but the call comes and it says, get up, leave your country, leave your family, leave your people, and go where I'm telling you to go. I've got this plan, and you, Abraham, and your wife are going to play a major role in this plan. I'm going to make you a great nation, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to bless those who bless you. All the peoples of the earth will be blessed. And generation after generation of children will stand up and sing a song about you, which includes their hands and their feet and spinning around. I think Abraham would have been totally discouraged if God would have told him that. So I don't think that actually happened. But so when Abraham gets this call, I'm imagining him looking to God and saying, I'm good. I'm 75, I'm not exactly sure what you have in mind right now, but my main journeys right now are to the beach, the shuffleboard court, and the all-you-can-eat buffet down the road. Because you've got to remember that Abraham was living in the great city of Ur, which is right next to the Persian Gulf, which was in the Fertile Crescent. This was the Sarasota of the ancient world. And as I look around today, I feel like I hope there's a call to Sarasota to come back to Mahoning County, because I feel like I'm starting, you all have seen this cycle, but I'm starting to hope against hope that when people go to Sarasota, they actually come back. So Abram's got to be thinking, this is crazy. I have no children. My wife is in her mid-60s. We don't have children. Well, the pilgrimage part of this might be possible in theory. The whole descendant part of this plan seems a bit crazy. In other words, even though Abram was obedient, I've got to think that somewhere in his mind, he's got to think, is this a very well thought out plan, God? So when you think about Abram, what we often think is one of the great heroes of the faith, a giant of the faith. He's mentioned 75 times in the New Testament. And in chapter 4 in Romans, Paul, there's many places that the New Testament authors speak highly of Paul, or of Abraham. But this is from chapter 4 in Romans. Hoping against hope, he believed that he would become the father of many nations. He did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as already as good as dead, or when he considered the barrenness of Sarah's womb. And so while Abram was a hero of the faith, and while he did hope against hope, Abraham was far from perfect. So one of the first stories we read about him is a trip that he and Sarai, they leave Ur, they leave Mesopotamia, and there's a famine, and they decide they need to go to Egypt. So at this point, Abram turns to Sarai and says, I know what a beautiful woman you are. Now, at this point, Abram is good. If he just would have stopped here, and as many maybe men can relate to, if you just say that, you just stop, you're probably good. But Abram continues. You're a beautiful woman, and the problem is that these Egyptians, they're going to see that you're beautiful, and they're going to kill me because you're so beautiful. So here's my plan. Let's say that you're my sister, and that way they won't kill me. So Abram saves his own neck, in the process of doing that creates all kinds of problems for everyone else. We don't hear a lot about Sarah, but I can't imagine that was super pleasant. But Abram acquires sheep and cattle and servants. Sarai's put in a weird position, and then Pharaoh almost dies. He and his household are inflicted with all these serious diseases. And Abram not only does this once, he does it twice. A few chapters later, this time it's King Abimelech, and he says again to Sarai, you know, say you're my sister, the king takes Sarai, the king falls ill, and the king is upset. So there's just kind of this pattern with Abram. Then there's, Abram gets this promise, and it's actually about 25 years before Isaac is born. And within that time of the promise and the coming to fruition of the promise, Abram gets a little bit nervous. And he and Sarai actually come up with this plan to try to find their own way around this problem of Abram and Sarah not having children. And so they invite Sarai's maidservant, Hagar, who then gives birth to Abram's son, Ishmael. And so they do this, they try to craft their own plan to work around God's plan. And then finally, when we get to the passage that Ethan read today, when Abram is promised again this descendant, Isaac, he laughs. He says, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And not only does Abram laugh, but Sarai, just a couple chapters later, also laughs. So here we have a couple that doubts. We have a couple that laughs at the promises of God. We have a man who's in this bad habit of wherever he goes, telling people his wife is his sister. And this is the couple that God chooses to covenant with. This is the couple that is promised land and nations in their descendants and blessing. And I think two things that I took away from this is that God enters and works his covenant through very unlikely and very imperfect people. So let's look at this first one, unlikely. As I mentioned, Abram's 75, Sarai's in her mid-60s. God chooses two people late in life who in a sense are probably winding things down to begin something totally new. Now, at least in our culture, where youth is prized heavily, this is not where you look for new things to start in the elders of the culture. And Paul is very blunt about this. He says in this passage in Romans, his body was as good as dead, about Abram's body. So this is not the place you expect something new to happen. And I want to take a minute to speak to the older saints in this congregation. It's not just a message to the older saints, it's to all of us. That God isn't done with you. That God isn't done working through you. That you don't have to set off on some completely new journey. And you certainly don't have to birth a nation for God to be at work in your lives. And there's many ways that I could speak to this, but I just want to point out a few. First one, the older saints in our congregation offer wisdom and perspective. And I think wisdom's one of those words that we might use a lot, but what does it really mean? What does it really mean to be wise and to seek counsel from the wise? And I think one of the books that addresses this more than any others is the book of Proverbs. And if Proverbs is a book that's written from the standpoint of a father speaking to his son, and that father is trying to offer him counsel on what it means to live wisely. And one of the big themes in Proverbs is this idea of paths. There are paths of wisdom and there are paths of folly. And the instruction that handed down is how to choose the way of wisdom and avoid the way of folly. And one of the ways that the father does this to the son is by giving them previews of what's down that path. So he talks about wisdom calls aloud in the street. So there's this call of wisdom in this path. And the older father then gives a preview of if you follow that path, there's personal well-being, there's happy family relationships, there's good standing in the community. But there's this other path. There's a path of folly. And often that path leads to the grave. So we make decisions all the time in our lives. We come to points, paths, and make a choice. Probably something like 70 times a day, you make a choice, which means 20,000 times a year, you're making a choice. And the older saints in this congregation have made a lot of decisions and chosen a lot of different paths. And like all of us, some of those decisions have probably been wise, and some of them have been foolish. But part of what the older saints offer us younger people is radioing back to us from the front lines what's at the end of those paths. If you go down this path, here's what you can probably expect. If you go down that other path, here's what you can probably expect. And these decisions that we make every day add up. The French philosopher Albert Camus said, we are, in a sense, the sum of all our choices. So we make all these choices, and these choices over time end up crafting us and making us into the people that we are. And so people that have gone before us, in a sense, can offer us a map, can say, this is where there's a major hazard. This is where there's an unexpected oasis. This is where I made a U-turn. I think you should make a U-turn. And this is the time I almost went off the cliff. And it offers a perspective to us that's down, farther down the path. And it also offers a perspective on what ultimately matters in life. So from time to time, I think we need this. We can't think about this probably every moment, but we need to have our perspective refreshed. Christiana and I, a couple weeks ago, went to Ash Wednesday service at the Presbyterian Church, and this might be slightly morbid, but one of my favorite moments of the year is that when someone comes up to me and they put ashes on my forehead, and they said, from dust you came, to dust you shall return. Why is that one of my favorite moments? Because in that moment, I get a perspective of my life from the grave, from the dust. And at that moment, I can then look back from the dead, from the grave, and try to figure out what is it that matters in life. And that tends to put things in perspective. It tends to help you figure out what is it in my life that matters right now, and what is it just fading away. And that's one of the things that we're offered. When somebody steps out in front of us and says, this is where you're heading, this is what you can expect. They're radioing from the front line. Secondly, our older saints offer us wisdom. Older saints offer us a witness. So in light of today's passage on covenant, I was thinking about my own grandparents. And I had two sets of grandparents, and each of my grandmothers took care of my grandfathers in the last years of their life. One grandpa was just a very easy patient. it was kind of a model of just dying well and with the care of his grandma. The other one was not easy. He was a very proud man, and when he began to have to give up more and more control of his life, it wasn't pretty. And many of you have probably seen this. That's really hard. When you have been in control all your life, and now your world is shrinking, it becomes hard. And it never got better. And my grandma, it was not easy. I think when he died, in some ways, there was a relief. Not because she was happy he was dead, because it was so hard. But one of the things that I saw in that is how serious both my grandmas took that covenant, took that promise of in sickness and in health. And what a testament that is to me, and I know many of you in this congregation have done the same thing to the younger generation of saying, this is what covenant looks like. When things get hard, you don't get out. When things get hard, you stick around, because that's gonna happen. What a blessing that was to my life, and I know many of you have probably had that blessing of looking at your own parents and your own grandparents and seeing the way the covenant held and being a testament to your own life. What a gift it is to us that are married now to be able to say to our spouse, when things get hard, I'm not leaving. When things get hard, I'm staying. Third thing, our older saints offer an enduring voice. Now, this might seem unlikely because, you know what, if you have grandkids or great-grandkids, there's a lot of noise coming at them. I had the same thing when I was a kid. I had really good grandparents, but I also had friends that I listened to a lot more than my grandparents. But you know what? 20, 30, 40 years from now, when you're gone, my guess is that those voices of the friends are not going to be there. A lot of times, at least in my experience, the enduring voices are of the older people. Those are the voices that stick around for 20, 30, 40, for a lifetime. That we've, even after they're gone, those voices remain in their head. And my encouragement to you is to keep speaking into their lives. They may not hear it right this moment, but that doesn't mean that down the road, they're not going to be ready to hear that voice. So that's the first point. We see that, I'm going to take a drink of water here, we see that God is at work through unlikely people. Secondly, God is at work through imperfect people. If God's promise to Abraham depended on perfect people, his plan would have got about this far. The Bible would have been about this thick, I think, if the story of God depended on perfect people. We talked about last week, there's Noah. There's this beautiful scene of Noah exiting the ark, the animals exiting the ark, the covenant's made. And then you know what happens afterwards? You probably know. Noah plants a vineyard. He drinks some of his own wine. He gets drunk. He's naked. And his children are forced to come up with a strategy to hide their father's shame. And things don't improve from there. Abraham's grandson, Jacob, steals the other grandson's, Esau's, blessing, forming a bitter rivalry. Abraham's great-grandsons decide that they're going to sell their brother, Joseph, into slavery. A more distant grandson of Abraham's, King David, a man after God's own heart, has some serious and a dysfunctional family. In numerous ways, David's family was dysfunctional. So if you're looking for a pristine line from Father Abraham to Jesus, you're not going to find it. It is anything but pristine. As Eugene Peterson writes in his book, the biblical material consistently portrays the family not as a Norman Rockwell group beaming in gratitude around the Thanksgiving turkey, but a series of broken relationships in need of redemption. God doesn't need perfect people to enact his plan, but he does need willing people. Abraham and Sarah could have stayed in Ur. They could have said to God, thanks, but no thanks. But to their credit, they set off on this journey. They didn't know where it was going, but they set off anyway. And 24 years later, the fruit of that promise came in the child of Isaac. When I was farming about this time of year, late February each year, I would have completed my plan for the crops that year. And that plan included when I was going to start the seeds, when we're going to start transplants, when the transplants were going to go out to the field, when we expected the first harvest. And one of the crops that I took charge of that I really loved was watermelons. And so we'd get those started about, you know, the goal was to get them in the ground maybe late May, early June. And we'd go out there with these transplants, we'd plant them by hand in this plastic mulch. And I really had this, I loved weeds. That's really strange, but I was fascinated by weeds, and I always wanted to conquer weeds. And so I'd always start out that season with a plan on how I was going to win this battle with weeds. And with the watermelons, the plastic mulch helped some, but we had these big aisles. And so then we came up with these various different ways. We would cultivate it with a tractor, but also we would lay down mulch. We experimented in lots of different ways to keep those weeds from growing up there. And for a little while, it looked like I was going to win the battle. About late May, I could look down those rows of watermelon before they'd really spread out, and the aisles looked pristine. They looked perfect. And then the long days of summer hit, and the rain and the heat, and strawberries come, and you get so busy, the watermelons are neglected. And by the time August came around, when we were harvesting watermelons, we'd have pigweed that was this high and lamb's quarter that was this high. And if you've ever, I assume those weeds grow around here, but they can get out of control. And it was hard to even tell what kind of crop was in that field. So we'd head in there hoping that there was a crop. And despite those weeds, despite all those mistakes we had made that season, there was almost always a large crop. There was the fruit. It's so interesting. You go out to the field with a plants that can be fit in the back of a pickup truck, and you come back months later with just thousands and thousands of pounds of watermelon. You have to fit into truck after truck after truck. And among those weeds and messiness was a fruit, was a harvest. But the thing is, unless you plant that seed you can't have the harvest. That's the one thing that's going to stop the harvest, is planting the seed. And in many ways, planting a seed each spring is like an act of faith. It's stepping out. God doesn't need perfect people to carry out his plan, but he needs people willing to step out in faith, to plant the seed even though things are going to get messy, and trusting in that mess that God is going to produce a crop. The vast, expansive family tree of Father Abraham did not come about because of perfect individuals or perfect families, but because God was at work through imperfect people to produce a harvest. One final point. After God affirms the covenant with Abram, two things happen. First, he gives them a sign of the covenant. As I mentioned last week, almost every one of these covenants then is coupled with a sign. So last week, the rainbow, the bow, was the sign of the covenant. This week, it is circumcision. So Abram, now 100 years old, has to take another step in faith, and he's going to be circumcised. His faithfulness now will take, the faithfulness has to go out of his head into his body. He has to be bodily involved in the covenant. So his faith isn't just a theory, it's bodily. And secondly, Abram's given a new name, Abraham. And Sarai's given a new name, Sarah. And even God himself gives himself a new name. The name is El Shaddai. This is the first time that we read in the Old Testament God calling himself El Shaddai, God, the mountain one. So everyone takes on a new name. These three people that are covenanting together have all taken new names, and from that covenant is birthed Isaac. And a new name signals a new purpose. And during this season of Lent, we are on a journey, just like Abraham and Sarah. And our journey begins, like theirs, with a covenant and a new name. And the covenant of ours is our baptism. And when we emerge from those waters of baptism, we too are given a new name, Christian, and a new purpose, following Christ. And just like our older saints help us to have a roadmap for life, Christ too gave us a roadmap for life. As read in the passage of Mark, Jesus says, if you follow after me, there's going to be a cross. He says, if you follow after me, there's going to be life and life abundant. But Jesus says, if you follow after me, if you're serious about following after me, you'll eventually find a cross. And when you find that cross in the road, you don't go around it, you don't turn around, you pick it up, and you keep going. And just as God called Abraham and Sarah to that journey, he calls us. And just like Abraham and Sarah answered that call and bound themselves in covenant with God, we bind ourselves in covenant with God as well. And when we start this path, we don't know exactly where it's going. But the Christian life is not about knowing exactly where the future holds, but knowing him who holds the future.